Hello, this is Irene Bullard. I'll be reading the Bloomington Normal Pantograph dated Tuesday, February 28th. Let's begin on the front page. Judge finds Peterson not guilty in parents' deaths. Psychiatric report says son was insane at time of killings. Brian Peterson believed he was the devil when he stabbed his parents on a Sunday morning in July in the midst of a psychiatric breakdown that escalated to voices telling him to kill the pair, according to an evidence statement accepted by a judge Monday at Peterson's bench trial on murder charges. The 26-year-old defendant was found not guilty by reason of insanity. In the deaths of Nancy and Bruce Peterson, the ruling by Judge Robert Freitag was based on a 7-page statement from the state and defense outlining how Peterson killed his parents and his reaction to the crime when confronted by authorities. In a 30-minute bench trial where the state and defense agreed to the evidence, Freitag concurred with a psychiatric report that found Peterson did not understand the criminality of his actions when he stabbed first his mother in the chest and then his father in the back. According to the statement, McLean County Sheriff's deputies found Bruce Peterson on the front porch of the home on Lara Trace, bleeding heavily from multiple stab wounds to his back, and his son in the garage wearing blood-stained clothing. A large kitchen knife covered in blood was found in the garage. Brian Peterson was placed in a squad car, kicking and screaming, said the statement. Before he was airlifted to a Peoria hospital, where he later died, Bruce Peterson told a sheriff's department investigator that his son had a mental episode and had been talking about the awakening. Nancy Peterson was stabbed 4 times, 3 times in the chest and once in the left arm, as she sat in a chair in the living room. Her husband left the bedroom when he heard her screams, and was stabbed 10 times, including wounds to his back and shoulder. Brian Peterson screamed, "You're already dead," at his father as he stabbed him, according to the court filing. In interviews with police, Peterson said his real name was the devil, and Brian is just a channel for me, said the evidence statement. When asked in a second interview hours after the murder why he had killed his parents, Peterson said there was a reason, but he was unable to discuss it. He later said he stabbed his parents to take on all the darkness I could because I couldn't take it all on any other way. Assistant State's Attorney Brad Rigdon said after the hearing that Peterson has been diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. Shortly after his arrest, Peterson was found mentally unfit to stand trial, but he was restored to fitness several months later. A doctor hired in an agreement between the state and defense concluded that Peterson was insane at the time of the killings. Peterson declined the chance to make a statement during the bench trial. He responded affirmatively in a soft voice to questions from the judge about understanding his rights. Defense lawyer Michael Herzog and Rigdon presented no evidence other than the evidence statement and the psychiatric report. State's Attorney Jason Chambers said anyone involved with the case recognizes what a tragedy it was from the beginning. The doctor's report was consistent with the facts of the investigation, said Chambers. An April 21st hearing is scheduled to review the evaluation Peterson will undergo after he returns to McFarland Mental Health Center in Springfield. Doctors will determine where and what type of treatment Peterson will receive. Under state law, Peterson could remain in treatment for the rest of his life, the length of time he could have served in prison if convicted. City nixes tax share deal with Normal. In a move expected to return about $1.2 million a year to city coffers, the Bloomington City Council voted 7-2 with little discussion Monday to end the 30-year-old Metro Zone tax-sharing agreement with the town of Normal. The city will dissolve a partnership in which it and the town shared the infrastructure and service expenses and net revenue for a West Side commercial and industrial area stretching from Walmart on Market Street in Bloomington to the Crossroads Center and what is now the Rivian Automotive Plant in Normal. Motel hotel taxes and water fees were excluded. Bloomington officials saw the agreement as inequitable, saying it gave Normal a total of $7 million more than the city received since the agreement was created in 1986. We have given the town of Normal over $12 million, and we have received approximately $5 million, said Mayor Terry Renner. Each year now we give them $1.2 million. The termination was retroactive to December 31, 2016. Ward 8 Alderman Diana Howman, who is running for mayor, along with Renner, Ward 1 Alderman Kevin Lauer, and two other candidates not on the council, opposed the measure. Echoing Normal Mayor Chris Koo's proposition, she said, suggested suspending the agreement, including any revenue payments for all of 2017, to discuss renegotiating or replacing it. I am uncomfortable with the idea that we're dissolving this without having something to take its place, she said. No Normal officials addressed the council. Lauer said that after the meeting that he voted in favor of the dissolution because the agreement had become outdated. The 30 years of the Metro Zone's lifespan saw most of the revenue-generating development in Bloomington's share of the zone. We looked at updating it and trying to amend it, but it didn't appear it was going to happen, said Lauer. The best result is to draw an end to this one and look at the future. Ward 9 Alderman Jim Fruin also voted to keep the agreement, saying, I think it's so critical that the two communities work together. Fruin noted there has been some discord between Bloomington and Normal over businesses that were not in the metro zone, relocating from one community to the other. That's not good for either community, said Fruin. I just think we have to work for a solution for the good of both communities. I hope Normal will be receptive to furthering discussion. Renner suggested that the future economic development talks between the communities center on a more regional approach that is consistent with the BN Advantage initiative. That initiative is led by a committee of local community leaders, including both mayors, to grow the entire local economy and not just one area, Renner noted. Even though ending the agreement with Normal may have created some hard feelings, Renner said after the meeting that he thinks the two communities will continue to work together in other ways. An agreement has to be mutual, he said. We understand that they were protecting Normal taxpayers. They should also understand that we have to protect Bloomington taxpayers. Bloomington already has factored the $1.2 million Metro Zone revenue savings into the city's proposed $213.8 million for the fiscal year starting April 1st. City Finance Director Patty Lynn Silva and City Manager David Hales presented at Monday's meeting the proposed fiscal plan with a 3% increase, about $6.2 million, in spending that they said is balanced with no increases in taxes or fees. They said much of that increase will be covered by drawing from various fund reserves to help pay for $24 million in infrastructure spending and other capital projects, including $5 million for street resurfacing. Hales said he hopes to have the council take final action on the fiscal year 2018 budget on April 10th, following a budget workshop on March 11th and a public hearing March the 27th. Human Services Try to Reframe Impact. National initiative to connect with the public comes to Twin Cities. Just as a building needs to be well built and maintained so it doesn't fall into disrepair, People need to be developed and supported so their lives don't fall into disarray. That analogy is one way that human services agencies that argue they are misunderstood in the public arena will begin conversations to explain what they do in the months to come. There is a disconnect between the important work that we are doing and the public's and policymakers' understanding of that work. Bridget Gavagan, a consultant with the National Human Services Assembly, said Monday. Gavagan met with 35 people, mostly leaders of McLean County Human Services agencies, at Chestnut Health Systems as part of the Assembly's National Reframing Initiative. The Assembly, as organized in 1920, collaborates with human service agencies nationwide. The challenge right now is the human services sector, as a whole, for the last decade or longer, has experienced level funding or cuts, which makes it more difficult to address complex issues, Gavagan told the Pantograph before her workshop. A nationwide survey by the Frameworks Institute found that many Americans see only part of the human services sector, don't view people who work in the sector as experts developing plans to address complex issues, and don't understand how human services benefits them and society. That disconnect also exists in McLean County, said representatives of several human services agencies who participated in Monday's workshop. It's clear we need to change the message, said Laura Furlong of Mark First, which supports people with developmental disabilities and delays. People don't understand what we do. That's why the Assembly created the Nationwide Reframing Initiative. Human services help build a strong community by helping people to reach their full potential, said Peter Rankatis of Project Oz, whose programs assist homeless and runaway youths. There are storms in life, he said. We can help people to weather those storms so they can be successful. For example, we all agree that K-12 education is important, Rankatis said. But if you can't get to school, if you're not well fed, if you have a disability, or if there are problems at home, that affects your education. Human services can help to alleviate those problems. When you have robust and well-funded human services, you have a stronger and healthier community, said D. Dante Lotson of YWCA McLean County, whose programs include child care and senior services. Just as buildings need to be well built, people need good early childhood education, Gavagan said. Just as buildings need repairs after a few years, young adults who graduate during a recession may need assistance for a while paying rent. People laid off when a factory closes may need retraining to find a new job, and older adults may need programs to stay healthy. You just don't build a house and walk away from it, she said. If our well-being isn't maintained, that impacts our health and society loses our talents and resources. To Illinois legislators grappling with the priority of human services during the ongoing state budget impasse, Gavagan said that it's time and cost efficient to prevent problems rather than responding to crises later. Legislators need to step away from the rancor, see the important work being done by human services around the state, and consider what kind of communities they want to live in, Gavagan said. Legislators are worried that people are fleeing the state, Rankatis said. The human services are just as important to a community's infrastructure as roads and garbage pickup. State Watch. Rauner eyes Medicaid services. Governor Bruce Rauner's administration is seeking to offer more Medicaid services through managed care programs. Rauner and two cabinet members announced the plan in Chicago Monday. It involves choosing a vendor that'll provide managed care services to 80% of Medicaid clients. That's up from 65% now. It'll also be expanded to all Illinois counties and children in the care of the Department of Children and Family Services. Rauner's Department of Health Care and Family Services says the program will encourage prevention and offer services backed up by evidence of success. Illinois began moving Medicaid patients to managed care in 2011. Managed care pays insurers and health networks fixed per-patient fees instead of paying separately for each treatment or test. Nearly two-thirds of the state's 3 million Medicaid clients are on managed care plans. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, February 28th, the 59th day of 2017. There are 306 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On February 28th, 1917, the Associated Press reported that the United States had obtained a diplomatic communication sent by German Foreign Minister Arthur Zimmermann to a German official in Mexico. The Zimmermann note, which had been intercepted and decoded by Britain, proposed a German alliance with Mexico and Japan should the U.S. enter World War I. Outrage over the telegram helped propel America into the conflict. On this date, in 1844, a 12-inch gun aboard the USS Princeton exploded as the ship was sailing on the Potomac River, killing Secretary of State Abel P. Upshur, Navy Secretary Thomas W. Gilmer, and several others. In 1861, the territory of Colorado was organized. In 1942, the heavy cruiser USS Houston and the Australian light cruiser HMAS Perth were attacked by Japanese forces during the World War II Battle of Sunda Strait. Both were sunk shortly after midnight on March the 1st, with a total loss of more than 1,000 men. In 1953, scientists James D. Watson and Francis H. C. Crick announced they had discovered the double helix structure of DNA. In 1960, a day after defeating the Soviets in the Winter Games in Squaw Valley, California, the United States won its first Olympic hockey gold medal by defeating Czechoslovakia 9-4. In 1967, American magazine publisher Henry R. Luce died in Phoenix, Arizona at age 68. In 1975, 42 people were killed in London's Underground when a train smashed into the end of a tunnel. Thought for today, education is learning what you didn't even know you didn't know. Written by Daniel J. Boorstin, American historian, educator, and librarian of Congress, 1914 to 2004. Today's Flick Fact. Question: when a man named Dan Beckwith had a chunk of extra land in east central Illinois that he couldn't fully maintain and decided to just give it away to the state, what happened in return? And the answer is, they named his former land after him. Thus was the birth of Danville. Barns set for April closures. Traffic reduced to one lane for resurfacing. Maintenance projects will close parts of one of Bloomington Normal's busiest roads again this summer. Tawanda Barnes Road will be reduced to one lane between Illinois 9 and Fort Jesse Road from May to August for resurfacing, and the road will be closed entirely near McLean County Highway 36 near Downs for replacement of Trent Bridge from April to July, said County Highway Engineer Jerry Stokes. The resurfacing project is estimated to cost $2 million, but that cost won't be finalized until after the project is bid at the end of March. Once the section is completed, Tawanda Barnes will have been resurfaced from U.S. 150 to the village of Tawanda over the last several years, said Stokes. When we go to pave the final surface, the section from Illinois 9 to General Electric Road will be closed down for a day. Halverson Construction of Springfield will replace Trent Bridge for $1.3 million, according to County Board materials. Stokes said drivers will be detoured through downs onto US 150. Stokes wrote in a memo to the board that Tawanda Barnes from Illinois 9 to Fort Jesse is used by 12,500 vehicles per day. He estimated the section near Trent Bridge is used by 1,600 cars per day. The county also is preparing to add a right turn lane from southbound Tawanda Barnes onto Ireland Grove Road, which could happen this fall, said Stokes. That would be a free-flow lane where motorists can turn without stopping. The county would split the cost of that addition with the City of Bloomington. Stokes said no cost estimate is available yet, but the city estimated it would be $750,000. Stokes said previously southbound traffic attempting to turn right at the intersection sometimes backs up to Oakland Avenue, a full mile. The intersection is near State Farm's corporate south campus, and the road also is a key artery to and from Normal Community High School. IDOC investigator under scrutiny. A former investigator with the Illinois Department of Corrections is under scrutiny after Illinois State Police said he reportedly had a relationship with the wife of a prison officer he was investigating in a sexual misconduct case. Jeffrey Gaber was terminated from IDOC in January following dismissal of criminal charges against Michael S. Alsup, who had been accused of custodial sexual misconduct with a female inmate at Logan Correctional Center in Lincoln. The agency declined to comment on the Gaber investigation or whether the agency has launched an investigation into Gaber's work on other cases involving alleged wrongdoing by IDOC workers. Gaber was employed by the IDOC from 2003 until January 17, 2017. Logan County State's Attorney Jonathan Wright told the Pantograph on Monday the charges were dropped against Alsup after Wright's office received a report from ISP related to the relationship between the inmate and the correctional officer who resigned his post before charges were filed. We became aware of some allegations and we referred them to the Department of Corrections, said Wright. The information in the ISP report indicates Gaber was allegedly involved in a relationship with Alsup's wife while he was conducting an investigation into her husband's conduct. That information compromised the state's case against Alsup, said Wright. The Logan County prosecutor said that he has not received additional investigative reports related to Gaber. Before he went to work for the IDOC, Gaber worked as a part-time patrol officer for the village of Hudson. He was acquitted of murder in 2001 in the controversial shooting of Shannon Smith. The victim, who reportedly had mental disabilities, was shot during a police chase after he failed to pay for $15 in gas. Judge to review health records. Alleged sex assault victim's mental state and medication probed. A judge agreed Monday to review the mental health records of an alleged sexual assault victim to determine if she was taking medication that may have impacted her mental state during the incident. Kyle English, 25, is charged with sexually assaulting a woman in July after the two had been swimming at Crestwick Country Club in Bloomington, where English works as a golf pro. The alleged assault reportedly occurred at the suspect's home, where the pair went so he could get his contact lenses. Judge Scott Trzewski initially ruled that the defense was not entitled to the records that include mental health care until April 2016. Without proof that the woman was taking medication at the time of the alleged assault, the records were irrelevant, said the judge. But the judge changed his decision after hearing arguments from defense lawyer Stephanie Wong that we're seeking information to which we have no access. We are in an impossible situation. The judge ordered the state to obtain the woman's 2016 mental health records for his review to determine if medication may be an issue. Assistant State's Attorney Kristen Alferink said the woman indicated to another person that she had stopped taking medication before the incident. The judge reserved a ruling on how much information a jury may hear about the prior sexual contact English and the woman had before the July 9th incident. The judge reserved a ruling on how much information. Rather, Wong argued that the information is an exception to the state's rape shield law that bars a jury from hearing information about a victim's prior sexual history. Drzewski said that he will wait until trial to rule on whether the jury will see text messages exchanged between the woman and English's roommate, including their chats about relationships. An April 3rd hearing is set for the return of the mental health records and further arguments on pretrial motions. Final day of February may bring storms to BN. March is likely to come in like a lamb, but February may end with the threat of thunderstorms that may become severe later in the day, say forecasters with the National Weather Service in Lincoln. Today's high likely will be around 67 degrees, said Dan Smith, a meteorologist with the NWS. Scattered thunderstorms are possible in the morning, he added. Of more importance will be a frontal system in Iowa that will approach in the late afternoon and evening hours, and thunderstorms are expected to develop along that, he said. Those will increase in intensity as they push across our area. Some of the storms could produce some damaging winds, hail, or even the possibility of a tornado. It is time to start thinking about the increased potential for severe storms, Smith said. The National Weather Service will mark Severe Weather Preparedness Week, March 5th through the 11th, and the Tornado Drill Day, where schools and other agencies practice for a tornado, is set for March the 7th. It's a little bit early, but we know that severe weather can strike any time, he said. Already there is a lot of instability in the air, some changing weather patterns, and those are the ingredients for severe weather. Any showers or thunderstorms should end after midnight, but cooler temperatures will follow the system. The highs on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday will be around 45 degrees, according to the National Weather Service. There are a couple of photos on this page of a young man, Esteban Ramirez, sanding down a bench. It says here that he built the bench outside the West Bloomington Revitalization Project office at West Washington and Allen Streets. Monday, the Normal Community High School freshman volunteered to work on the project that he hopes will be used for passengers waiting at the Connect Transit bus stop. He is sanding it down before painting it, and it looks like he's doing a great job. Area calendar. Today is the primary consolidated election. The polls opened at 6 a.m. and close at 7 p.m., and there are various contests in Bloomington, Lincoln, and Washington. This evening at the Normal Public Library is the program Principals Read from 6:30 to 7 p.m. Poetry Reading. Poetry is Normal. The bi-monthly open poetry reading at the Normal Public Library will be presented by poet Janice N. Harrington at 1 p.m. Saturday in the Library Cafe. Harrington will read from her work, including excerpts from her new book, Primitive, The Art and Life of Horace H. Pippin, copies of which will be available for purchase and signing. Harrington is the author of two previous books of poetry and several award-winning children's books, including one listed among Time Magazine's Top 10 Children's Books. For more information, you can call 309-452-1757. We are going to take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the pantograph, so please stay tuned.